Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts in our 17 showrooms nationwide. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, Minister for Media Catherine Martin is set to present three comprehensive reports to Cabinet today which delve into the inner workings of RTE. With a total of 116 recommendations between them, they're expected to highlight reforms needed in governance, financial practices and staff engagement at the national broadcaster. Now, for more on this, I'm joined on the line by Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Good morning to you, Paul.
Morning, Colin.
People may not have held the names of these reports and what their purposes were foremost in their minds. Can you remind us of each of the reports and in brief what they set out to do?
Yeah, that's probably because they were ordered last year. There's three reports in total. One is a report on contractor fees that's chaired by the employment affairs expert, Brendan McGinty. Then there's a review on culture and governance at RTE led by Niamh Brennan of the UCD Centre for Corporate Governance. And then there's the Mazars forensic accounting report on the barter account. The barter account obviously became a thing last year, entered the lexicon, and I'm sure people remember that that was the account used to top up payments to Ryan Tubridy, but it was also used to pay for entertainment and other expenses, most notoriously flip-flops for an RTE summer party for advertising clients.
And the key proposals that we know of coming out of these reports include assigning the Controller and Auditor General as RTE's ultimate auditor, which would mean RTE being accountable to the Public Accounts Committee, further scenes like those we saw last year, updating legislation on governing the RTE board and revamping presenter payment structures. Any other big surprises that we know of?
No, I don't think there's many surprises, but there are, I suppose there are notable things. Like you said, there's 116 recommendations. The Niamh Brennan report is expected to have about 90 itself. So there will be loads to delve into. I think overall, what's come out so far, you know, restructuring of pay scales, more transparency, better governance, better oversight, even the move to the CNAG, that's something that Catherine Martin has said that she's open to. She said that as long ago as last year. So at the moment, there's no major surprises. I think what you're going to look at is just the scale and the depth of the recommendations. I think if you look around what's been reported today in the Irish Independent, Fiona Sheehan and Gabby Agathavicalia reporting about another €650,000 in the RTE barter account that wasn't known about. Things like that will come out, little details. There will be very, very surprising details among all of these reports.
And do we know anything about the pay proposals at this stage? There's talk about them being linked to public service scales. Do we know anything about what's proposed there? Because I suppose that's been one of the biggest issues of public controversy, even going back before the recent controversy.
Yeah, I think one of the lines that we do know about is that the Niamh Brennan report will likely recommend that all salaries at RTE that are above €200,000 would just be published as a matter of course, not just the top 10 on-screen earners, which has been the case so far. You know, that linking of a pay structure more in line, broadly in line with the civil servant, so that you would have transparent pay scales for all kind of roles, so people will be grouped together based on their roles, their responsibilities, and assigned a value as determined internally by RTE.
Yeah, I think that there was a tidying up exercise on grades in RTE as well, being conducted internally as well. But there's, I suppose, what people might call a bit of scandal fatigue in relation to the story itself in RTE. But we can't underestimate the emphasis Cabinet have placed on these reports in order to trigger some action. Simon Harris said back in February, before he was even Taoiseach, that these reports being delivered to Cabinet would be where the rubber meets the road for the broadcaster.
Yeah, and I suppose in terms of actions, one of the things that you would be looking at is Catherine Martin has said that she wants the recommendations of these reports carried out, and there is about €40 million in a government bailout contingent on that. You know, there was €56 million before Christmas laid out for RTE, €16 million of it paid last year, and at the time, ministers and Catherine Martin was very clear to say that the other 40 million would be handed over based on the implementation of the recommendations of these reports. Now, they had been originally planned to go to cabinet kind of mid-March. That hasn't happened there. I think, you know, speaking to people over the weekend, I think everyone was kind of taken aback a little bit by the size of the report. So the fact checking from the share or from the stakeholders had to kind of take a lot longer than they had planned. But when you're looking at now, you know, there's going to be hundreds of pages, 116 recommendations, and RT will be expected to carry those recommendations out before the government is willing to part with that 40 million euro.
You mean some kind of an action plan, key performance indicators in order to release government movement on the money end of things?
Yeah, and I would imagine that within RTE, there's already, there's nobody in RTE, particularly under the kind of new regime of Kevin Barkhurst, who wouldn't be aware of what at least some of this report was going to say. These things have been pointed to for a long, long time. So I would imagine that RTE will be ready with an action plan relatively soon to kind of kickstart that process and to start that process of restoring public trust in the broadcaster, because there's still a lot of people who aren't paying their TV license, and a lot of people. I was speaking to a TV license inspector who's in the estate the other day, who talked about a lot of people aren't paying it because of what happened last year, and I think they're kind of just waiting for movement both on a funding model, but also to see, you know, is RTE, or, you know, can RTE at an organisational level be trusted with their money?
Right. I suppose the what will focus the minds, number one, is that this session of the Dáil ends in mid-July, and then its preparation for the budget between probably has begun already, if Ardesh speeches are anything to go by. RTE will have to have its plan in ship shape and ready for delivery almost sooner than the six-week time frame.
You would imagine so, especially as the government has its own deadline on the funding, future funding model for RTE, as, you know, the end of this Dáil term. So, you know, they want, or, you know, Micheál Martin has spoken very clearly about this government wanting to be the one that puts in place a plan for the future of RTE. It's been kicked down the road enough times. So they want to have that done. I think RTE would probably, you know, I think within government there's an expectation that there will be some kind of plan in place before they announce that funding structure.
Right. Any clue as to what the plan is in order to entice people to pay, or to maybe, I suppose, soften the blow of wider enforcement of the licence fee? There's some reports today of a reduced licence fee more widely collected.
Yeah, and this is what's been kind of called the hybrid model. You would keep the TV license, but you would empower revenue to collect it, but it would be cheaper. RTE's finances then would be topped up from the media funds, direct exchequer funding. I think if you were going to make it more enforceable, if you were going to make revenue have the ability to put things like attachment notices into people's salaries, if you were going to make it legally binding for people to be able to, or revenue to be able to collect it like that, you would probably have to lower the cost to people. And I think the idea is that you would sell that as a fair trade-off to people, like, you know, look, we're going to get tougher on collection, but we're also going to make it a little bit cheaper for you.
Right. I suppose going back to the deadline for RTE's action plan on this, if the October budget deadline wasn't enough, your own paper reporting a survey of government TDs, particularly Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael TDs, and a majority of those you talked to keen to trigger the election after the budget, before the clocks go back, you were saying today in your front page.
Yeah, this is a survey that myself, our political editor Elaine Loughlin, and Michelle McGlynn carried out of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael members, just to see where they were at on when they wanted the election triggered. Before the clocks go back, it's one of those things that you hear, for the public who might not know, politicians really don't like going to your door when it's dark, and they want to be there in the daylight. They, you know, there's this sense that people don't answer the door when it's dark. You're less likely to get engagement on the doorsteps. It's harder to kind of pitch yourself to people. It's also just not as pleasant to be walking around. Any journalist who's done the on the doorsteps pieces, gone on a canvas with a candidate, you will know that it's a lot nicer to do it for something like the Europeans and locals that take place in June than it is to do for a February or March general election. Simon Harris has said, look, he wants to go the full distance. He wants this government to go till next March. There is that kind of that sense that that he might be minded to do that. But among Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael members, that they are the majority is eager to go early pre-Christmas, just after the budget.
All right. Just one final thing, Paul. Another issue likely to be discussed at Cabinet today is the emergence of tents along the Grand Canal. Taoiseach Simon Harris said the situation wouldn't be allowed to happen again after the tents were cleared and those seeking international protection were moved to other tented accommodation with facilities out at Crux Ling. But with the around 80 tents, Karen Creed, our colleague, is reporting now at this stage along the banks of the Grand Canal. It's back in the government's court, 400 metres away from Mount Street. What kind of a response are we expecting on this?
At the moment, I suppose what you will be looking at is more accommodation coming on stream. I was chatting to somebody this morning who said that they do reckon there will be more accommodation in the next week, but it's the level of the additional capacity. You know, those guys who are in the tents are there because they want to be close to the IPAS offices. They want to be close to offers of accommodation, and that's why it's happening in that area. What would really be needed over next week is something big. You know, there's talk of a, you know, state lands to put a kind of tented accommodation on, a wide scale tented accommodation within government. You know, talking to people over the weekend, there was some question as to why, you know, such a big deal was made of removing the tent city that had sprung up around Mount Street when the obvious reaction would have been more tents just kind of slightly further away when there wasn't the capacity at Crux Ling and City West to cater for these international protection applicants.
All right, Paul Hosford with the Irish Examiner. Thanks very much for joining us. And next, we're going to be looking at 50 years since the Dublin Monaghan bombings. Barry Lennon will join me here in studio next to tell me about a special 6-part series to coincide with the anniversary based on 70 interviews that have been conducted on this. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.